and to be able to come together and think about the grace of God. Think about how wonderful He is and all that He's done for us. And I trust that that's the reason you're here today, because you have come to honor Him and to honor His Son Jesus, who died for us, and to lift our thoughts to heaven and to encourage each other in the common fellowship that we enjoy with God. What a privilege it is to be able to call God our Father. What an honor it is, but only possible because of the grace and mercy of God. Today I want to talk about five loves of marriage. I'm amazed every time that I go into a bookstore, Barnes & Noble Hastings, at the number of books that have been written about how to have a happy or successful marriage. And yet, in spite of all the books that have been written, I'm also amazed at how many unhappy marriages there are in society and the very fatalistic view that many have. In fact, one social analyst a few years ago said that 60% of those who get married do not expect their marriage to last. Back in my early days, boyhood days, I remember Gordon Lightfoot wrote a song that kind of had that fatalistic view. The words were, "I don't know where we went wrong, but the feeling's gone and I just can't get it back." Somehow that feeling just sort of left, and you know, and suddenly our relationship has fallen apart. Unfortunately, this very fatalistic view has also affected members of the church, members of God's family. The reality is that even among the children of God, there are a number of dissatisfied and unhappy marriages, and sometimes, oftentimes, because of silly things that we bring up to fuss and fight about, rather than really concentrating upon the important things that are really necessary to have a successful relationship. In fact, in my time again, back in 1972, when I graduated from Lancaster High School, our school theme song for the senior class was a song that was written by the Carpenters. The song goes, "We've only just begun, white lace and promises, a kiss for luck, and we're on our way." So hopefully there's some kind of hope here. And yet I'm also reminded of a sign that appeared apparently in Hollywood, "Wedding rings for rent." And thus we find that many do not expect the marriages to last. I want to make an observation here. It is not my intent today to lay a heavy burden upon those who have failed marriages. And it is certainly not my intent today to have those who have unhappy marriages. But I do want to observe some things that I think can help you make your marriage better. The fact is that the greatest book that we could go to with regard to happy marriage is not anything that was written by James Dobson or any other social analyst or any man, but rather the book that was written by God. And the reason why is because the Bible is a book about relationships. It is, first of all, a book about our relationship with God. And number two, it is a book that is written about our relationship with one another. And marriage is just that. Marriage is a relationship between a man and a woman by means of a covenant. And the greatest counsel that we can find come from the one who is the very author of marriage. We realize that in the book of Genesis, the second chapter, we find the very beginning of the marriage relationship as recorded in Genesis 2. And recognizing and understanding that God is the one who was the very author of the marriage relationship. And there are 21 simple words that suggest the fact that marriage should be a blessing. "Therefore a man shall leave father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two become one flesh." It should be indeed a relationship that offers blessing. And one can feel the exhilaration. I love the poetry of Adam. "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman. She belongs to me." God understood that it was not good for the man to be alone. And thus He brought together the two to create a blessing for the two. Thus, I believe that it is possible, and I want you to hear me, I'm going to say it twice, that it is possible for two committed disciples to have a successful marriage. Let me say it again. It is possible for two, not just one, two committed disciples to have a happy marriage. It's going to take more than just feelings. I don't know where we went wrong, but the feeling's gone and I just can't get it back. Reality is that to have a successful marriage, you have to have more than just feelings. And it's going to take more than just the emotion of the moment, but it takes God and the relationship that you have with God to truly have that successful relationship. That is, for you to be the kind of husband you ought to be and for you to be the kind of wife that you ought to be in that relationship. And in that context, when you have two committed disciples that are devoted to God, then you can truly have the kind of marriage that God intended for it to be. I want to talk about the loves of marriage. And everyone who's ever been through my marriage counseling class has heard these before, the five loves of marriage. The first love of marriage is the love of desire. It is the kind of love that gets a great deal of press with regard to the marriage relationship, especially in Hollywood. And oddly enough, it is the only kind of love that can be lawfully expressed within the context of the marriage relationship. Yet, oddly enough, I would suggest to you that it is not the most important love of marriage as with regard to the staying power of marriage. In fact, there's a very sordid story recorded in the book of 2 Samuel, the 13th chapter, with regard to this kind of love. You see, God made us physical creatures. He made us that way, and He desires for us to express that physical intimacy within the context of a lawful marriage. But unfortunately, man has made it a very ugly thing. And in fact, the Bible is very candid about this in the book of 2 Samuel, the 13th chapter. He says in verse 1 that after this, Absalom the son of David had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon the son of David loved her. Here is a man who is in love, but it is a sick love. In fact, it says Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her, for Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shemaiah, David's brother. Now, Jonadab was a very crafty man. Notice again, he was distressed and he became sick because of his desire and passion for this beautiful girl. And so he and his friend devised a plan. He said, "Why don't you just pretend like you're sick? And then invite this sister into your room to take care of you. And while you do, then you'll have an opportunity to express this desire." And so he did, and he violated her. And then in the 13th chapter, the 15th verse, it says, "Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he had loved her. And Amnon said to her, 'Arise and be gone.' When she refused, now his passion of hatred is even greater than his passion to fulfill his desire." However, in the book of Proverbs, the 5th chapter, Solomon describes this same intimacy within the context of a lawful marriage, and he describes it in a very beautiful way and in very candid language. In Proverbs chapter 5, beginning with verse 15, Solomon offers wise advice to the son, and he says, "Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be only for your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth, as a loving deer and a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and embraced in the arms of a seductress?" The fact is, within the context of a lawful marriage, this becomes a very beautiful thing. And in fact, within the context of the divine love that we're going to talk about, within the context of affection, it becomes a very, very beautiful thing. God made us that way. And while it is a love that is peculiar to marriage, it is not the most important. The second is the love of romance. God not only made us physical creatures, but He made us, again, the kind of one that would enjoy the context of romance. Romance is this euphoria. You know, when we come together, there is this feeling of energy, of being together, this feeling of feeling valuable. In fact, we might ask the question, where did it come from? It actually came from God. Look in the Song of Solomon. And in the Song of Solomon, we have this love story recorded. And in Song of Solomon chapter 2, you have this Shulamite woman, the Shulamite girl, who is thinking about her lover boy and all the things that he has said to her. And in this marvelous poetry, she says in chapter 2, verse 10, "My beloved spoke and said to me, 'Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing is come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grapes give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely.'" Well, that's a boy, that's a girl, boy and girl in love, we call it. And so there is this poetic feeling of euphoria and energy. And it's interesting that in the book of Genesis, the 29th chapter, it says and makes this observation in verses 10 and 11 that when Jacob met Rachel, it says, "It came to pass that when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled a stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept." Now here's a boy in love. He just is fallen in love. There's this feeling of energy. And let me suggest that we need to cultivate that romantic. Let me suggest to you guys who sometimes don't feel romantic that you need to cultivate that romance in your relationship. Instead of adding a little money to your deer rifle, why don't you buy her some roses? Buy her some flowers. Send her a card. Sometimes it doesn't even cost anything. Just pick up your cell phone and send her a text message sometime during the day just simply to remind her of how special she is to you and of how much you love her. Women like to be romanced. They enjoy the special nights out. They enjoy the candlelight dinners. And so, learn to cultivate that. Why? Because God made us that way. Because God encourages us to cultivate this love of romance. This is a love that is peculiar to courtship and marriage. And it is also the kind of love that gets a great deal of press in Hollywood, but you can't build a marriage on romance. Not alone. If you try to build a marriage on desire and romance alone, your marriage is doomed to failure. You can't build it on romance alone. And yet it does need to be cultivated. Thus, the third kind of love is the love of affection. I often describe in marriage counseling session that affection sort of is the atmosphere that often, but not always, leads to the desire being the event. The reality is that we love to be held and need to be held. The idea of affection is this concept of protection and sheltering. In fact, the Greek word storge, I think, is a Greek word that is probably a word that describes the love of affection. And it's interesting that in the book of Romans, the first chapter, when Paul is detailing the sins of the Gentile world. In Romans 1 verse 31, when he uses the word unloving, there is the word astorge, the very opposite of that. But in the book of Romans, the 12th chapter, in Romans chapter 12 and verse 10, you will notice that Paul says, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another. In other words, this is the kind of love that often is not only expressed in the context of marriage, but is also expressed even in our relationship with one another as brethren. And yet I would suggest to you that it is much more important than the love of romance or love of desire. It is a kind of love that will provide security in the relationship. In fact, it's been scientifically proven that we need to be touched. Doctors have done surveys in hospitals, and they will half of the patients maybe touch them, and half of them they won't. And those that were never touched felt like that the doctors didn't care about them. The fact is that we all have that need to be held, that need to be touched, that need to be this sense of security. And here's a little test. You've probably heard this before, but just bear with me. Guys, first, you buy that brand new pickup truck you've always wanted. And about 2 days after you get it home, she goes to the mall on a Saturday afternoon. And when she comes back, she tells you that she's put a dent in that new truck and it was her fault. How are you going to react? What's your reaction going to be? Or, ladies, he comes home and says, not as far as I know to the fault of my own, but I've got bad news. I lost my job today. How are you going to react? The fact is that we all need that sense of touch to be held and to feel secure. Affection isn't dramatic, but it is something we certainly need to learn how to cultivate. And we men often do not feel like, well, you know, I'm just not the kind to be affectionate. Well, you need to learn how to be. Just bottom line. And probably the best place that you can learn that is from your mate. She or he can show you how to be affectionate. The next kind of marriage is a love of friendship. Phileo, the kind of love that Jesus apparently had and relationship that Jesus had with John. Here is a love that is born of association, which means that there needs to be some communication. Communication means to make something in common. And the greatest atmosphere for communication is friendship. And in fact, probably the greatest plague that is destroying the marriage relationship today is a failure to communicate. A failure to share in common our ideas, our dreams, our worries, our concerns together. Learn how to enjoy things together. Ladies, maybe it may be a day at the deer blind. Men, it may be a day at the mall. Whatever it is. Or it may be just simply that you enjoy a common book together. Or maybe a time frame of history. Or maybe going on some vacation, a special place together. But learn how to become friends. In fact, when a couple comes to me and they're friends, I usually know that that's probably going to be a pretty good marriage. But when a couple comes to me and it's all about desire and romance, I know that that's probably a relationship that is in trouble. That's reality. So learn how to enjoy things. Maybe it's just simply playing a game. Maybe it's a card game or some other game that you can enjoy together or enjoy a movie together. And with regard to communication, this is where women are excellent, men aren't. The fact is that women most commonly are full of words. Men are very different. The reality is, and not necessarily that this is a bad thing, but men simply oftentimes see a very simple answer to a problem. She says, here's the problem. He says, well, there's the answer. You know, kind of like, duh, you know. She didn't want to hear that. She really didn't want an answer. What she really wanted is just to talk about it. And all she needs is for you to listen. And so men and women have to learn how to put those two things together. And the fact is that it is proximity, not intimacy, but proximity that will enhance the communication between a man and a woman. Learn how to be friends. Now, if you want a solid marriage, it comes from friendship more than desire and more than romance. Not to say that the first two are not important. The final love of marriage is divine love. It is probably best expressed, besides in Ephesians, the fifth chapter, which I'll be reading from in a minute, from the very familiar text that we know in John 3:16. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. God loved us even though we didn't deserve it. He loved us unconditionally, though we didn't deserve it. And in the book of Ephesians, the fifth chapter, when he described the relationship between the man and the woman, beginning in the 21st verse, he says, submitting to one another in the fear of God. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husband as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as also Christ is the head of the church, and He is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for her, that He might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the Word, that He might present her to Himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. Notice that I begin, first of all, with verse 21, submitting to one another in the fear of God. Wait a minute. I thought that the woman was to submit to the man. And he does say that. And he does point to the fact that the man is indeed the head of that relationship, but not as a tyrant. But how? Because he is primarily submitting to her. How? Because he is primarily concerned about her needs before his needs. You understand that? He describes the head and the role model here as Jesus. And Jesus loved George even though I was a hell-bound sinner and rebellious and walking against everything that God desired and wanted of me. Using the school-learned language and headed in the wrong direction. Jesus loved me unconditionally, that He might sanctify me, that He might lift me up and purge me of sin and make me a better person. Thus, the love of marriage, the true love of marriage that will make it last, is when husbands and wives both learn to have this unconditional love. Well, he doesn't deserve it. You need to repent. Well, she doesn't deserve it. You need to change. And what you need to do is you need to focus upon the needs of your mate. Because the reality is, there are times in the marriage when the affection is not there. The desire is gone. The romance is gone. And how does it last? I've known marriages to last for more than 30 years without the first four. Simply because one of the other simply loved the other mate unconditionally. Just like Jesus loved you and me. I knew one fella whose wife was truly his enemy, but he still loved her. Expressing every day, just simply trying to meet her need. And oftentimes when couples come to me and they say, well, I just don't love him anymore, I just don't love her anymore, you know what I say? You need to repent. Because Jesus said, because Paul says, husbands, love your wives. And Paul said in Titus 2, wives, you need to learn to love your husbands. This divine love is not a love of emotion. It's a love of will. A love of when they don't even care, I still love them. When all of the rest is gone, when the affection and friendship are missing, I still care about this person who has an eternal soul. You know, thank Griffin for the song we sang about grace. And I thought about grace in the context of my own relationship. I have a wife, and I'm very, very fortunate, who is very devoted to me. I'm going to tell you, I don't deserve a bit of it. Not a bit. It's only because of a gift given to me, unmerited. And I'm very blessed for that. But that's the context of marriage, the sense and idea of grace, of mercy, of two human beings that come into a relationship that probably don't even deserve to be in that relationship, of learning to unselfishly look at the needs of their mate. Guys, if you will focus on her rather than yourself. And ladies, if you will focus on him rather than yourself, I can assure you that you will have a better marriage, a happy marriage, a better relationship. And it was in that context of grace and mercy that God has richly bestowed upon us his wonderful love and mercy, that we might have the privilege and honor of being his children, of being heirs of a great inheritance that he has promised to give us eternally. Maybe today you're here and you understand that, but you've never done the things necessary to receive that grace. If that be your need, we encourage you to come. As we stand and sing the song selected, we can help you.